A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts. In the sky so blue, the birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, 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 hey. It's a sunny day. Sunny day now. My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. But call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, 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 hey. It's just a sunny day. Hey, 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 it's a sunny day. It's just a sunny day.
The KSL Greenhouse. Information and great talk about your home, garden, and your lawn. If you love perennials, can't get enough help on landscape design, or just want to keep your lawn and vegetable garden pest-free, grab a pen. It's the KSL Greenhouse on KSL News Radio.
Welcome back to the Greenhouse Show. Dave Meekham sitting in for Maria Chaleos today. It's been a lot of fun hanging out with you today, Ton.
It's always fun.
And I mentioned in passing just a second ago kind of the demise of my peach tree. I have a contender that I really enjoyed, and this year it's just, I think I said to you, it's a dry twig sticking in the ground. I don't know what killed it yet, but I've heard that a lot of peaches, or a lot of peach trees rather, have been having trouble and struggling this year. Is that right?
They have, and it's just peach trees are not very durable trees for the Utah climate, even though we grow them because we love the fruit. And so, I'll be more specific, hundreds and hundreds of peach varieties. And of all the peach varieties out there, there's actually a fairly limited number that do relatively well in Utah, because there are peaches bred to grow in Florida and Georgia that wouldn't overwinter here because of a lot of different things, even though they're the same species. So what happened last September is we got a really early hard freeze.
Yeah, that's
and the
right.
Peach trees were still green. And peach trees take a long time to go dormant in the fall. And so because of those peach trees were like, hey, it's summer, let's just stay here and do our thing. They were hit really hard by those two frosts we had last September into early October. And this year I'm seeing a lot of peaches that are just flat out dead, or peaches that are really struggling. A lot of the limbs are dead and the leaves that are coming out are stunted and yellow and look like they have aphids in them and a lot of chlorosis problems. And between the buds being damaged, I think that the conductive tissue was also damaged. And so we might have some bumper years for the nursery selling peaches for the next few, because there's just a lot of peaches that were damaged or killed.
Right. And I think that sounds probably like that's what happened to mine. Mine was a small dwarf and would have been really susceptible to that freeze. And that makes sense now. And that is likely, I'm thinking, what happened to it.
Yeah. So, I mean, some things that you can do, I mean, with the damaged tree, if they're not too bad, all you can do is give it some light fertilization and see if you can help it nurse itself back to health. But if you want to replant peaches, what you might consider are what are called high chill varieties. So like your Contender, Red Haven, Intrepid, PF24C, Cold Hardy. Some of these peaches go into a deeper dormancy, and that may help a bit, although you found that it's not 100%.
Nope.
The other thing you can do is from about July on, you do not want to fertilize that peach. You know, you want to let it, you know, be green and water it well. But if you fertilize, you know, especially after about June, you could actually delay dormancy, because it takes the peach weeks and weeks to harden off its tissue to tolerate the kind of cold we saw in October. And so if you have peach trees especially, be very careful on pruning additionally, because any hard summer pruning after about June or so could delay dormancy and make things worse for your fruit trees, especially peaches.
Okay. Well, there you go. And I'll be planting another contender. I really like that variety.
Yeah, it's a good variety. And it's normally even hardy up in the Cache Valley in Heber. And so you just, by the luck of the draw, got a bad year. And it's
bad
one
timing
that I would consider doing again.
Yeah, then we'll get another one in. Well, let's grab a call here right now. We have Caleb, who's been on the line in Ogden waiting. Thanks for waiting for almost an hour, Caleb. How can we help you out today?
No problem. I've actually got two questions if we have time.
Sure.
First one is I'm dealing with some Japanese knotweed. When I moved into the house a couple of years ago, it kind of taken root and established itself. So went and tore all of it out and been ever since just digging up, trying to get the roots out. So it seems like every couple of weeks, some more little sprouts will come up here and there and we'll dig down and get those roots out. So just trying to fully eradicate that. Any tips on getting rid of it?
Okay. So a couple of things. This is the first call in my almost 8 years of doing the show that anybody's ever called about Japanese knotweed. It's not very common, but when you get it, it's much harder to get rid of than bindweed. It's actually one of the most invasive plants in the world in temperate climates. So you're doing a good job at eradicating it. Now, one thing that you might try doing is letting it come up about 6 inches off the ground. And I would go and get a product from your local farm store or someplace like Great Basin Turf, Steve Regan, called T-Zone. And I would let that get about 6 inches tall. And when it is cool, if it's not a huge area, I would, especially in the fall, apply T-Zone to those, maybe even mixed with a little bit of glyphosate, which is a Roundup type product, and see if you can set them back that way. And so if you don't use T-Zone, maybe Q4 Plus would be another good one, or Weed Free Zone. But you would mix those and maybe with a surfactant or a spreader sticker. For right now, is it in your lawn or flower bed? Where is it growing?
No, so there's probably about a 3 foot strip between my garage and my fence. So there's
okay, wonderful.
Grow in there.
So for now, let it grow up about 6 inches to a foot tall, and then get some like kills all around up, and get a surfactant, and make sure that that knotweed is well watered, and fat and sassy and happy, and maybe even fertilized. And so what I would do is get some glyphosate and mix it up according to label, and then get a surfactant or a spreader sticker and mix it in, and then get a bag of 2000 lawn fertilizer. And you can use it on your lawn, but you just want a couple tablespoons of it per gallon in your mix, in your sprayer. Mix that all up, and you want to make sure that that 2100 dissolves into solution. And then you're going to spray that mix when it's cool in the evening on the knotweed. And it won't kill it all, but because it's cooler and you've got that 2000 in there, plus the surfactant or the spreader sticker, you'll get a lot more on the plants that'll absorb a lot better, and you'll get a lot better results than just Roundup alone.
Gotcha.
So I don't usually like recommending brews on the Greenhouse Show because people can get into trouble thinking, well, if one glug is good, two glugs must be better. You follow the instructions. But you, with the addition of the spreader sticker or surfactant and the fertilizer, the 2000, that will actually increase the effectiveness of the spray.
Okay, that sounds good. We'll give it a shot.
Okay. Hey, what's your other question, Caleb?
Real quick, just wondering some tips on growing hydrangeas out here.
Avoid big leaf hydrangea. I wouldn't even plant it. That's Hydrangea macrophylla, P-H-Y-L-L-A. Otherwise, most of the other varieties will do okay. They do not like extremely hot areas, so like a south exposure against your house, but they will tolerate full sun. I think the easiest one to grow is one called Annabelle. And what city are you in again?
Ogden.
Ogden. Okay. So you could hit some of your local garden centers up there, Valley and J&J, and look at their varieties, but Annabelle does well in more sun. Oak leaf does well in the shade. There's some paniculata varieties. I'm trying to remember their names, but those seem to do fine too.
Okay. Well, I appreciate you guys' help.
All right, Caleb. I hope hopefully that will all work out for you. Let's try and get one more call in here before we go to the break. And another caller's been waiting for a while. Jim in Syracuse. How can we help you out, Zim? Jim, with your zinnias?
Yeah, I've got some zinnias in my front yard I've planted, and they've got some bugs on the leaves, or as far as there's holes on the leaves, and I haven't been able to identify or find a bug. Is there any suggestions or something I could put on those zinnias?
Well, are the holes at the edges, or, I mean, there's a few things that could be causing it. Slugs and snails could be doing that at night, and you wouldn't see them necessarily.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah, flea beetles could be doing it. But the flea beetles don't usually do holes. They more just turn small portions of the leaves really brown. And so if you're seeing holes, it could be slugs and snails. Do you have any moist, cool areas near there to where they could hide?
Well, there's a bush behind it.
Okay.
It is planted with some mulch around it.
So. Okay. So, I mean, those are conditions that are favorable to the slugs and snails, and so you could try drying out the area a little bit. You know, you don't want to get it like Nevada desert dry, but maybe space out irrigations a little bit, and then you could put down some slug and snail bait, and then just kind of taking the shotgun approach. Also, just use a general yard and garden insecticide and spray them, and that should cover the bases of whatever it is.
All right, that makes sense. All right, I appreciate that.
All right, good luck with that, Jim. Hopefully that helps you out. We are going to take a break now, but Roger, Eric, and Leonard, we're going to be back and take your calls on the other side of this break before we close the show. Coming back for our last segment of this edition of The Greenhouse Show right after this on KSL News Radio.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was three blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.
Okay, just 5 minutes left for us to take these last calls. We're going to jump right into it, Ton. First off is Leonard from West Jordan. Good morning, Leonard. How are you?
Fine.
How can we help you out today?
Well, I planted some raspberries a couple of years ago, and they've been growing great this spring, but now I'm seeing some curling and black leaves. So what's going on?
Are they at the tips of the plants?
They're the newest leaves, pretty much.
Okay. Yeah. What I would look for on some of those that are curling and turning black, cut into the cane and see if it's hollow in the middle and it might have some frass in there. I suspect that you either have a horntail wasp or a rose stem girdler, which also gets into raspberries. But usually when you start seeing that and the rest of the growth is healthy, you have an insect working its way down the stem.
Yeah. What can I do?
Cut them out.
Cut out the bad?
Yeah. In the future, you can spray for those when they start to leaf out in the spring, but they're so close to blossom right now, you might be able to get one spray on, but I think your main defense is going to be to cut them out.
All right. Thanks for your call, Leonard. Good luck with that. Let's talk to Roger in Linden. You're working with some oak brush, Roger.
Yes. Thank you. I built a cabin 3 years ago down in the Fairview area, and to create a defensive zone, we had to get rid of the oak brush, and last year it started to come back, and I took a backhoe and went around and dug up like 3 feet below the surface to rip out all the roots. But they keep coming up, and I'm just wondering if there's any kind of a spray or anything better to do to get rid of it.
Well, anything you can do is going to be expensive, and there's not a spray that will keep them at bay. What you would almost have to do is, if you trench those out, is put in a corrugated metal barrier 3 or 4 feet deep to barricade them. And that's not a guarantee that it would totally stop them, but it would really slow them down. But because of the nature of the tree, is the one of the main ways they reproduce is through those root suckers. You're fighting against thousands and millions of years of Mother Nature. And it might be that, you know, that is a solution to it. But short of putting in a physical barrier 3 or 4 feet deep into the soil, if you tried some glyphosate, it would damage the trees, but it would stop them for the season. And eventually you would have dead oak brush if you kept using it.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the show.
Okay, Roger, thanks for being there. We got time for one more call, and that's Eric in West Mountain. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning. How are you?
Doing really well. Got 2 minutes for you. Go.
Great. So real fast, another raspberry and pumpkin question. Raspberries, I've got lots of grasshoppers, quarter inch to half inch big, and then I also have a deal with a bad squash bug problem with my pumpkins, which are in the same area. I'm treating them this season with neem oil. Is that the best thing I can do to be spraying and controlling the grasshoppers and the potato, or I'm sorry, the squash bugs for the pumpkins?
No. It may repel some of them, but look up USU's fact sheets on grasshopper control and on squash bug. I think that you're probably going to need to use either a pyrethroid, not repeatedly, or something like, how many pumpkins do you have? Lots of plants or a few?
We grow a large section, so probably 15 to 20.
Okay. Maybe Ortho's flower fruit and vegetable spray on the squash bugs, but there's a whole way to go through controlling those besides sprays. So what I'll have you do is email gardenhelp@usu.edu and ask about grasshopper control and squash bug control, and one of our horticulturists will get back to you with a lot more in-depth solution than we have time for.
All right, Eric, good luck with that, and send that email in. They'll get you helped out and squared away there. Appreciate your call from West Mountain there this morning. Ton, it's been fun hanging out with you again today.
It's been great.
And it's something I look forward to doing, and I look forward to the next time we'll get to do this, and hopefully now you've got some time to get out and go home and do some gardening yourself.
I hope so. Have a great weekend.
You too. Thanks, Ton. Thanks again for joining us, everybody. Enjoy your Saturday, and we'll be back next week on The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.